So what would you say is your favorite thing about your smartphone and your least favorite thing about your smartphone?
Well, it's funny, again, that this is the topic today because I talked with my family just this past week about the internet and cell phones and how much it's changed our lives and would we go back without it? And I had mixed feelings about that because on one hand, we have this joke in our family that came from one of my friends that somebody will pose this question and we'll go, if only I had a source of information at my fingertips. So of course we all love that. But man, I just feel so enslaved by it sometimes.
It is the strangest thing to me that I rely on it for so many things other than a phone. You know, like, it's the probably the last thing I use it for is to actually make phone calls. The number one thing I reach for it is take photographs. And I grew up with a dark room. Well, the two things. I grew up with a dark room. So I, you know, and an actual twin lens reflex, an old Yashica camera. So, I mean, I actually remember those days. And so to be able to whip out this camera that takes better pictures than probably most, quotes, real cameras I've ever owned is just so bizarre to me. And then I rely on it for a GPS in the car.
Like, oh, me too.
And the number of times that I have forgotten to print an actual map with actual directions and then the GPS doesn't work. And I feel completely betrayed.
Exactly. Oh, no, I have no sense of direction. So I will say that it is a total wonder for me. I have to rethink this going back thing because I would just be lost all the time like I used to be. But, you know, the biggest thing I think that we find to be a mixed blessing, of course, is social media because it's everybody's highlight reels coming onto our phones that just moves us into that comparison place that's so tough. One of our listeners said, my biggest struggle is comparing myself to others and finding myself wanting. I mean, haven't you felt that way?
Just every major holiday, every time someone has a birthday.
Yes.
It's so hard not to compare. What do you say their highlight reels with?
I've always heard the comparison thing of I compare my insides to everybody else's outsides, you know, the external to the internal, which is our ongoing conversation. And so, yeah, I especially the ones that these women wax eloquent about their children on their birthdays, I don't wax eloquent. So I always feel like I'm letting my kids down.
Well, I'm Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well.
Today, we're talking to Arlene Pellicane, author of Calm, Cool, and Connected, 5 Digital Habits for a More Balanced Life. Arlene is a speaker, author, and stay-at-home mom. In addition to Calm, Cool, and Connected, she's also co-authored Growing Up Social, Raising Relational Kids in a Screen-Driven World with Dr. Gary Chapman. Arlene and her husband, James, have 3 children.
Now, to our listeners who remember us joking about our cell phone issues, addictions maybe, a few months back, I'm just going to confess right now, I'm not sure whether I'm more excited or terrified to hear what Arlene has to say.
Yeah, me too. Arlene, we are so excited to have you with us today. What a relevant topic.
Yeah, hold on a minute. I'm on my cell phone. No, I'm kidding. I'm here.
Oh, that was mean.
I'm checking my texts while we're talking. Yes, this is something everybody has dealt with. Whether, you know, it was so funny. I was on a radio show and someone called in and the question was, what was your aha moment of when you knew you were addicted to technology? And I asked the woman, this woman was an online shopper. And I asked her, how old are you? If I may be so bold to ask. And she said, I am 70 years old. So this touches everybody.
Everybody. Well, and I think probably our listeners and even Sherry and I have confessed we're a little nervous. Like, are you going to tell us to put our cell phones away? And it gives us a little a hint in the foreword because Gary Chapman said in your foreword, this book isn't about getting rid of your devices. Yeah. It's about gaining control over them and putting them into the proper place in your life. So that is good news for all of us. Why did you write Calm, Cool, and Connected? Which I love your title, by the way.
way. Well, look at us. You know, we're not necessarily calm. We're nervous. We are quick to be angry, quick to, you know, like, what do they mean by that? You know, and even though technology is supposed to connect us, I love to ask people, you know, technology keeps going forward, you know, advancing with all these different versions. But are your relationships, are they really, truly better? Like now, do you say, oh, I'm closer to my spouse because I've got my phone and we've got Netflix and we have this. Oh, I'm closer to my kids because of this, to my sister, whatever. And in some ways, yes, maybe you can Skype your sister that lives in another state, and technology can be awesome for that to connect you in your relationships. But I wrote the book because for most people, technology has become interference. Many times we don't even realize it because we're so used to a screen in the car, a screen in the restaurant, screen around the dinner table, you know, everyone goes home, okay, put your earbuds in, everybody goes to do their own thing. And we're used to that. So that is the question of how can we live a more healthy life to unplug more often? And a lot of people don't know how to do that or not aware of that. So that's one reason for the book. And then also, as I look at families and write for families, I see that the kids will emulate what the parents do, right? And if the parent is looking at their phone 60 times a day, then that child is going to grow up thinking, wow, that phone is really amazing and really the center of the universe, and I better get myself plugged into one of those too. You know, so it's also an idea of what are we passing on to the generations that follow us.
I'm already feeling convicted. Amy and I are going to have so much to talk about after this episode.
Yes.
One of the lines from your book that really stood out, you said, we must measure our dependence on our devices from time to time to make sure we aren't making idols out of them. What do you mean by making idols out of electronic devices?
Yeah, how interesting. In the Old Testament, you see that they made idols, right? And then okay, they made the golden calf and different things. So what did we do? Did we, you know, sculpt a smartphone? But let me ask you, when something happens in your life, what do we, myself included, tend to do? We go to Google. We're sick. We're going to move. We need to know where our kid should go to school. What do? We Google best school in such and such neighborhood. We Google, what does 3-day mucus mean? You know, we Google all these things. And so we no longer go to God first. You know, we go to Google first because Google has all these answers for us. So the way I think that idolatry works out is instead of this dependence on God, this worship of God, this centering around God, we have this centering around technology. Like, okay, Google's going to tell me where I'm going to eat, you know, what school I should send my kids to, what is the best church in my area. We Google the answers for these things, and we tend to think, oh, we've got this covered because I can just find the answer on the internet, instead of that dependence of God. I need you. I don't know where to go to church. I don't know where to go to school. You know, maybe you don't have to be in solemn prayer about we're going to eat for dinner. But, you know, we have centered our lives around these devices and what they tell us, versus centering our life around the worship of God and that communion with Him. So I think anything that stands in your way, that you're not putting God first, you're putting something else first, you know, it becomes like this idol in your life. And for many of us, it is technology. Just think of the sheer time we spend with a device. What if we spent like 1/10, 1/50th of that time in prayer or silence? And I'm guilty of all of this as well. So it is this idea that my phone will not become this idol, that I'm more addicted to it than I am to needing God's word in my life.
Okay, I think you made Amy tear up earlier.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I know the signs by now.
Tears, but
all right. Well, you use the word habit to provide your readers and now our listeners with 5 ways that we can put devices in their proper place. Can you walk us through those 5?
Yeah, because this is very hopeful. I'm not going to make you, you know, throw away your phone. It's just the idea of what are new habits that I can do that will make this better. So I take the word habit. The H stands for hold down the off button. And this is about have times in your day where there is no technology. Mealtime is a great time to hold down the off button. Nighttime is a great time to hold down the off button so you can sleep and not be interrupted by these little texts all night long. The A in habit stands for always put people first. And this is about living your life in a pivot. And by that, I mean, when you're sitting at your computer, when someone comes in the room, you don't just go, eh, You know, you actually pivot away from your computer, greet the person coming in. You know, if you're standing there in a crowd and you're staring at your phone and a friend walks up to you, you don't just go and just keep looking at your phone. You pivot away from your phone, look up at your friend and say, hey, how's it going? Let me finish up this text. I'll be right with you. So it's this idea that people always come first. When it's a decision of like, do I keep staring at my technology or do I look at the incoming human being coming into my airspace? I will choose the human being. So that's always put people first. B is brush daily, live with a clean conscience. In the same way that hopefully we brush our teeth twice a day, the same way you can ask yourself at the end of the day, did I post anything that was really rude and snarky? Did I, you know, hide behind the internet because I didn't want to talk to someone today? Did I watch something that would be really embarrassed if everybody knew I watched that, you know? So brush daily, live with a clean conscience with the things that you're doing, how you engage with your online world. And then the I is I will go online with purpose. And it's this idea that, okay, I went to check one email, but then 1 hour later I was looking at like shoes or something. It was like, how did I get here? So keep that, you know, even if you want to write a post-it that says, what am I here to do? And you stick that on your computer and you realize I come in with a task. I get in with my task. And then I get out. You know, I'm not going to cyber loaf here for hours and hours. I will go on with line with purpose. And then the T of habit is take a hike. And that means get outside. You know, it used to be the punishment for a child to go to your room. And now the punishment is go outside. I can't go outside. I can't breathe. I don't have Wi-Fi out there. You know. So the idea of God's nature is so restorative, so peaceful, so calming, such a change of pace for us. So just get outside, even if it's a short 5-minute walk and then you go return to your desk. That's fine. Get outside in God's nature. So that's those are your new habits.
Those all sound doable. And again, Amy and I will unpack some of those because I've been jotting down ideas as I'm listening. One of the other things you say in the book, try not to focus on the negative habit you're trying to shake. Instead, focus on the positive habit you're trying to embrace. This sounds like it could be the difference between success or failure. So can you unpack that for us?
Sure. You know, when you're like, okay, I have to lose 20 pounds, so I'm not going to eat chocolate. I'm not going to eat chocolate. I'm not going to eat chocolate. And then what do you want to do all day?
Eat chocolate.
Yeah. So you're focusing on what you're not going to do. And by about day two, you're like, I am so tired of not eating chocolate. I'm going to eat the whole bag, you know? So this is the idea of not saying to yourself, I'm not going to do this. But what are you going to do? So those habits, they're these cues that let us know, oh, my phone is charged right next to my head in my bed. So my cue when I wake up is I pick up the phone and I check the weather, I check my email, and I start in this really frazzled way. Okay, I want to change that. So my new habit is I'm going to put my phone in a different room and I'm going to put my Bible next to my bed. And then now when I wake up, I see the Bible and I'm reminded, oh yeah, I'm doing this new thing and I'm going to read a few verses before I start my day. And then you do that. So it's simply putting what are you going to do in front of you. And then it's like, oh, okay, now I know what to do. So instead of this negative, I'm not, it's the positive, this is what I'm going to do. And a lot of times when we think of freedom, we think of negative freedom, such as freedom from, you know, smoking, freedom from drinking, I'm free from in a negative way. But there's also this freedom for, like, now that I'm not entangled by my technology, I have freedom for better listening to God. I have freedom for being able to have time to talk to my family. Whereas before we're like, how do we have the time to do this? We're on screens 10 hours a day. How in the world are we supposed to talk to each other? So you're looking for this freedom for. So put that in that positive light. What are you doing this for? And what are you gaining? And what are you going to do instead of your old habits?
You've just given me an idea. When Daniel and I, right before we fall asleep, we're both on our devices playing solitaire, which I have trained my brain to make me sleepy. And I think we need to develop a new habit. So, all right.
Well, and just like you were saying, Sherry, I think so much of the problem with our cell phone use is relational. Mm-hmm. And Arlene, you say when human relationships get difficult, as they often do, it may just feel easier to default to devices, which are so much easier to manage. And so why is it easier to default to our devices? But also, what do we miss when we do that?
Yeah. So if there's conflict in the home, right? Somebody's upset at somebody else, someone's not so happy. It's so easy to just blame, well, we're busy, instead of thinking, what is the real problem here? If you've got a teenager in the house and they're not talking very much and you just figure, well, they're teenagers. And there is obviously some of that that's going on. I don't have a teen yet. I've got a 13-year-old, you know, but he talks to us. So there's this idea of, well, it's just the way it is. People just watch TV now. People are on their phones all the time. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And it's an easy way to kind of acquiesce that you have to work at your relationships, that there is work involved in staying close as a husband and wife. There's work involved in staying close to your mother, to your father. There's work involved. So a lot of times we'll just say we're too busy, because it is easier just to sit with a device. The device doesn't talk back to you. The device doesn't roll its eyes at you. The device does exactly what you want it to do. It goes where you tell it to go. It's much easier than a human being who might say, well, that's a dumb idea, or I would never do that. So it's so much easier to hang out with your game where you feel like you have accomplishment than maybe with your spouse where you feel like you're failing. But at the end of the day, at the end of your life, nobody's going to say, oh, I wish I would have played more solitaire. Oh, I wish I would have done more Candy Crush. You know, nobody's going to say that. They're going to say, like, oh my goodness, why did I drift so far away from the people in my life? So we've got to not use the devices as an excuse, and then also realize that, hey, my goodness, when we do have it as a rhythm of our life, that we're not always tuned, plugged into devices, and it's like, well, you can have a close relationship. So, you know, I'm not saying that everyone has to do this. My son is 13. He doesn't have a phone and he doesn't play video games. He uses the computer a lot for homework. So don't get me wrong that he's not on the computer. He's on it and he's got a school issued iPad and all of those things, but he does not use it for video games. And instead he plays the piano, he reads, he plays with the dog, he talks to us. Like, there are other things there that layer his life. Because to be frank with you, most students, they're already on their computer so much for school that it's like, my word, during your free time, you're going to do that too? It's like, when are you ever going to stand up and move your body? So all these things are very important for us to have the devices, but put them in place so we can have relationships with our loved ones.
We've seen how things, especially during in the political arena last year during the election, just really go downhill so fast. Years ago, it wasn't even possible to break up with someone via text, which my son's best friend just had that happen to him. And it was so painful, you know, and you couldn't have this big nasty debate on social media, but now it's almost normalized. Yeah. So what kinds of communication is actually effective via our devices, and what conversations would you say need to be had face to face?
Yeah. And you've got kind of two levels. You have your friend level, like my 300 friends, right? And then you also have your five closest people. So there are two different ways of how you do that, I think. But obviously things like, could you please let the dog out? Or, you know, when you're at Costco, could you get us some milk? So things like that, that's totally good, awesome, wonderful. Use your device, text the person. I'm at the corner of such and such and such and such. But if you have to apologize for something besides, like if it's an apology, like I forgot to pick up the oranges. Okay, fine. You may text, I forgot to pick up the oranges. But if you're texting like, I was a real jerk yesterday and I'm sorry that I was so snippy and please forgive me, go ahead and say that in person. So those list things, you know, you can text those and that's very effective. But any kind of apology can be made in person. Now, praise, things like, good job, you know, I really appreciated that. I think things like that can be done via text. Like, I love your book report came out so great, and you text that to your teenager. That's fine. But then also don't let that be the only way that you're communicating with your loved one or your friend and stuff. Make sure that you're saying it too, so that they're also hearing you say, wow, I saw your book report. It was so detailed and organized, and I'm so proud of you. That is excellent. So let it be a both and when it comes to praise and those compliments. You can text that, but also let that be. It's the same thing like if you go on Facebook and you see a lot of things like happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday. Like, that's really nice. But if someone actually called you and said happy birthday, or sent a real old-fashioned card in the mail to say happy birthday, or took you out to coffee for your birthday, that is much different, right? So the quality of that interaction is much richer. So yes, devices can be used for communication, but that rich stuff that happens face to face, and conflict much better face to face.
I've seen,
I'm looking at people's family arguments and I'm thinking, you know, you're my roommate in college. You're not even like my, you know, my closest best friend. You know what I'm saying? And I know that so-and-so disagrees with so-and-so and so-and-so's mad at so-and-so. Like, I shouldn't know that. So make sure that things are, you know, the things that are private stay private.
Absolutely. In your book, you say to enjoy more of the blessings, we must schedule in times of rest from the noise. We must be capable of setting limits and sticking with them. Now, one of the things I've learned as an HSP is I absolutely have to have quiet time. I'm a rare bird. I'm an extrovert, so I love being with people and I love noise. Yeah. But then sometimes I become completely overwhelmed, overstimulated by the noise, right, and I have to immediately get myself to a place where there's quiet. I literally carry earplugs in my purse. So in terms of what you wrote here about having time away from the noise, why is it that important? And then how do we schedule that time?
We're not meant to be on 24/7. So when the phone dings, or, you know, notification comes in, or you look at it, you know, and there's so many times we're just looking at it. You know, I've turned my notifications off so that they're not dinging all the time. And I know a lot of people do that, but we're still looking at it. You know, we're still checking it. We press the button. Did anyone text me? Did anything happen? So we're not really wired to be all the time on. And so it's wonderful to be able to rest and not feel like I have to keep checking that. Now, in the workday, it used to be that you left all your work in the office, but now you don't do that. You bring the work home with you because you can check your email at home. You can have your phone at home. So there's not the delineation that used to exist of being at work, getting in your car and leaving. And all of a sudden now you're totally like on leisure time. You're on, you know, rest time. Now you have the temptation to work and be productive all day long to get more done. And what ends up happening is you burn out because you're like, I'm exhausted. So it's this idea of set for yourself. Don't do this like, oh, this is this bar. I've got to attain another bar. No, no. Just set for yourself. What are the times in the day which would really work well for you to rest? You know, we alluded to it before. I think not charging your phone next to your bed is a great idea if you can, if you're not an emergency worker, because that way you can end and start the day without your technology. And that just has a peaceful, more peaceful end and a more peaceful beginning. So that might be an area where you say, I'm going to rest more in those ending and beginning moments. Another time is mealtime, to have all the gadgets go in the center of the table. If you're out, nobody touches them, you know, that kind of thing, or everything away in their purses, whatever it may be. But that's a great time to rest. And then maybe a digital Sabbath, whether it's, hey, we're going to do Sundays phone free, or Sundays video game free, or Sundays TV free, or another day of the week, or maybe Thursday night's going to be family night where nobody uses their devices after six, you know, whatever the case may be. For my husband and I, we were finding that when our kids went to bed, then we went to our computers, like, to get caught up. And then I'd look and think, oh, he's on his computer, so I'll get on my computer. He looks and, oh, she's working, I'll get some work done too. So everybody's doing this. And then we realized, like, I guess we could be kissing during this time, apparently.
So we set
that limit of, okay, let's not do that afterwards. Let's finish up and then be done with it. And we do pretty good with that. You know, there are a lot of times where it's like, oh, here we go again. You know, it's still on. So we're not great at that. So just realize that. But that's where we're trying to get to. That it's like, okay, turn off your computer. So sometimes he'll walk over to my desk and say, okay, turn off your computer. Oh, yeah, okay. And I kind of feel already as he's getting closer, oh, I got to turn this off. What am I doing? I'm still on my email, you know. So just have those limits so that you do have rest during your day, because it really does help.
So as you consider, you've just covered so many helpful things for us today, Arlene. As you've considered our conversation, what's the parting encouragement that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
I think it would be to reclaim your red light. And by that, I mean, I have started checking my phone at red lights. I don't know why I think I'm so important that someone might text me during my drive, but I keep my phone in the little cup holder and I'm driving and then I get the red light and I touch it. And then I'm thinking like, why are you doing that? Like, why are you touching your phone at the red light? Do you really think someone's going to text you in the next 5 minutes? And then if they do, what's the big deal? Like, you'll text them back when you get home. It's not a big deal. So I have reclaimed that red light to not touch my phone on purpose, to say, I will not touch my device at the red lights. And instead, I will be still. I will pray. I will listen to the radio. Whatever it is that I was doing, I will keep doing that uninterrupted without constantly checking my phone. So reclaim the red light moments of your life, which are all those little moments throughout your day where you have a little spare time and we tend to check our device. A little spare time, let me check. Don't do that. Instead of that little spare time, okay, Lord, I give you this day. God, I'm so worried about this meeting. Will you give me peace about it? You know, because whatever you're checking on your phone, you can batch that. You can check it every hour, right? You're going to be just fine. You don't have to check it every 8 minutes, 8.5 minutes to see if something's happened. So reclaim those small moments, give those back to God.
Wonderful.
And not only is that a wrap, but had I heard that advice a year and a half ago, Arlene, I would not have totaled my husband's car at a red light.
Oh, no.
Amy and I will talk about that when we do our processing episode. And I had forgotten it was a red light situation. I think I'm the only person I know who's managed to do that. Total a car at a red light.
No.
Are you serious?
We'll both confess.
Oh, my goodness. Look at this. We could save a lot of cars in the process, ladies.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And hard conversations with husbands.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding. No kidding. Head on over to gritandgracegirls.com/episode97.
There you'll find the transcript for this week's episode, the Digging Deeper download, Bible verse art, and you'll also be able to enter to win a copy of Calm, Cool, and Connected.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Grit and Grace, we would love it if you would share a review on iTunes. If you go to the website for this episode, you'll find instructions for how to do that.
Don't miss joining us next week when Sherry and I will process what we learned together from Arlene and reveal our red light veils.
Do we have to? For today, grow your grit. Embrace God's grace. And when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and break it. Okay, I'm dying to know, but we'll wait. We'll wait. Oh, my word. I really thought I was the only person who'd done that. Oh, dear.